On this week's edition of New York Now, the coronavirus hits New York with more than a dozen cases confirmed over the last week.
Most informed sources say you will see a significant spread of this virus through the population.
The legislature responds with funding to address a potential outbreak and new powers for Governor Andrew Cuomo. Assembly Republican leader Will Barclay joins us with his perspective on the bill, negotiations on the state budget, and more.
We prefer just repeal the bill. We think there's a real public safety crisis out there.
New York was supposed to place new limits on the use of solitary confinement last year, but those rules haven't gone into effect. We'll speak with advocates about a popular bill that would go even further. And the Reporters Roundtable is in with more on this week's news. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation
law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Get another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. The coronavirus finally hit New York this week, with more than a dozen people testing positive for the disease in the span of 6 days. The virus, also called COVID-19, brought Governor Andrew Cuomo to the state capitol to speak with reporters more than any other week this year. He gave daily updates on the disease and predicted it would continue to spread in the coming weeks.
The number will increase because this will spread, and the number will increase because it is math. The more people you test, the more positives you are going to find.
But Cuomo also said the public should remain calm about the disease, which has a relatively low mortality rate. More on that later. But first, the state legislature also had a hand in responding to the coronavirus this week. Lawmakers passed a bill in the middle of the night to set aside $40 million for the disease and give Cuomo new powers in the event of an outbreak. It's not unusual for the legislature to approve bills overnight with little notice to the public. In fact, it's relatively routine. That doesn't sit well with some lawmakers, like Assembly Republican leader Will Barclay. He joined us from the state capitol with more on that issue, the state budget, and more. Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay, thanks so much for joining us here on New York Now.
Thanks for having me. Great
Anytime.
To be here.
So I first want to ask you about the topic of the week, really, the coronavirus, but not so much about the disease. It's what the legislature did this week in response to the disease. So our viewers that aren't familiar, there was a bill. It allocated $40 million for preparedness efforts and then also kind of expanding the governor's powers to respond to an emergency like this and others. But the thing about this bill is that, like many others in Albany, it was written during the day. It was passed in the middle of the night. The public didn't see it beforehand. And
right.
I imagine you have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little disappointing. We ended up being in the legislature until 12:30 at night. The governor did a press conference earlier in the day. He said there's no reason to panic and then came back and pushed this legislation through the assembly. And we didn't get done until 12:30. So it was kind of questioned. Is there not to panic, and why do we have to do it so quickly? And why do we give the governor so many powers under this statute? Can't we want to do the $40 million, of course. We want to be prepared in New York State, but we end up giving him a lot of power in it. So was that really necessary, and then was it really necessary to do it in the middle of the night?
It seems like this happens so much in Albany, and especially this time of year. We're in March. The state budget is due at the end of March. It also happens at the end of June, where there's negotiations behind closed doors, and then we don't see a bill until hours before you guys vote on it. Why does this happen, and how can we get away from it?
It really is unfortunate. I always say sunshine's the best disinfectant. You've heard that. Now, I'm not saying necessarily this bill. I think we had to do something for the coronavirus. We want, you know, New York to be prepared. It clearly is coming. You know, we had a briefing by the Commissioner of Health that kind of outline the coronavirus and the risks that we have. But also, again, I get back to the fact the governor said in the press conference, nothing to panic about, New York is ready to go. And then 2 hours later, he's pushing a bill that got debated in closed doors, behind closed doors with two men and a woman, and then ultimately came out, and we had very little time to review the bill, and then the debate was in the middle of the night. So is that good public policy? Couldn't that have been done the next day? What's the rush to have to do it in the middle of the night? And you're right, it's not just, unfortunately, with that bill, we're seeing it time and time. The budget is a great example. We have a $178 billion budget in New York State. I mean, shouldn't we have a little bit more public input? So maybe the coronavirus, we want to move forward with that. I don't know why I had to do it in the middle of the night. We could have done it the next day. But with the budget, we do a lot of budget bills, and we do it through a message of necessity. And it's very hard to get through those bills. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of pages to have to get briefed and understand it and not to be able to really get much input from the public on the bill. So ultimately, I think it leads to really bad public policy. And unfortunately, we see it time and time again.
With the state budget, as you mentioned, it's $178 billion. It's a huge budget. It's one of the biggest in the world if you compare New York to even other smaller countries. And you often don't see it until the middle of the night. So we have about 4 weeks, a little bit less than, to pass the state budget. I'm wondering, as Republicans in the Assembly, you're in the minority, how involved have you been able to be in this year's negotiations?
Well, it's always a little bit because you don't know where it's going. So as obviously the governor introduces his budget. We have budget hearings, so we've been obviously very involved in that. We point out where we think, you know, the governor's budget is failing or is not appropriate.
Right.
And so we've tried to be loud about that, but ultimately it comes down to, again, where the rubber hits the road, it's very often three men or, again, two men and a woman now in a room where they do the horse trading at the end of the day. So, again, we have a little bit of say. We have the bully pulpit. We certainly push back on stuff that we know could be coming down. For instance, our conference is very strong that we don't want to increase taxes in New York State, so we keep hammering on that message every time we have a public opportunity to do. But, you know, negotiating the fine details of the budget, clearly the minorities are cut out of that process. And again, I don't think it's good.
Right, and you are, as Republicans, even though you don't have the majority in the chamber or in the Senate, you are representing a significant part of the state.
Yeah, for our conference, almost 7 million people that we represent. And it's mostly upstate. You know, interestingly, that's one of the roles I take very serious because I'm the only legislative leader from upstate New York. And, you know, we have a sizable population. We have issues that are very unique to upstate, and I think sometimes because it's so city-centric, some of those issues aren't heard, and we shouldn't be locked out of the process. And again, we're not trying to demand that we run it. We understand we're in the minority, but we can improve on maybe some of the ideas that the majorities have and the governor have.
This year's budget is a little unique because we have about $6 billion budget deficit. We haven't talked about it in a few weeks, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
the governor has this plan that he wants to find some Medicaid efficiencies and slow state spending. I'm wondering what you think about that plan. I know it may affect counties in some way. We don't really know yet because, again, this is all being negotiated behind closed doors.
And it's unfortunate because he has, again, Medicaid's the main driver why we have the budget shortfall. So he set up the Medicaid redesign team that was charged with coming out with cost savings in the Medicaid program. Fine. We may be fine with it. But I think that is not due to report their findings until 2 weeks before April 1st. And so how much time is that going to give us to be able to review what their recommendations are and then institute them in a budget? Seems not really the appropriate way to be, you know, addressing that issue.
If not that way, are there any alternative ways that you would explore if you had the majority to look at the state's deficit?
So I'm not against the Medicaid the Medicaid redesign team is fine, but why not put legislative representation on there? Why not put minority legislators' representation on it? Again, because we might be able to provide ideas that they haven't thought of.
Your conference has been outspoken on the state's new laws on cash bail, which, just a refresher for our viewers, eliminated cash bail for low-level and nonviolent offenses. That's it's legal terminology. It's not so. It's a little bit more technical than people understand. You've been outspoken on this, and obviously this is an issue that's going to come up this month. The governor said either this week or last week that he's not going to sign a budget without changes to that law. Where do you see this going?
So we are happy, at least we recognize that change has to be made. We prefer just repeal the bill. We think there's a real public safety crisis out there. There's not a day that doesn't go by where I don't read about another violent criminal being released from prison. We see crime rates soaring in New York City and other areas. I think I saw a statistic today, New York City's crime rate's up 20%. We feel that's more than coincidence, but we really do think it's directly related to the bail reform bill, which, by the way, was passed last year in the budget without real great public input on that. No input from district attorneys, no input from law enforcement, no input from the general public. So again, it seems like, all right, they do recognize there's a problem, which I'm glad that at least that we're gotten that far with the governor and the majority leader, and the speaker is not quite there yet saying there's a problem, but I hope he'll come around too. But why are we doing it in the budget? Our idea is repeal it, Let's do hearings. Let's get the input from the stakeholders, the people on the front lines out there. And then we can make, we're not against bail reform. There's probably some reform of that needed to be done. No one should have to languish in jail for years waiting for their trial. But the wholesale just letting everybody out has caused some real public safety issues.
So you're in your third month as the minority leader. How's it going?
Well, I'd like to say time flies when you're having fun, but the fun part, I don't know, but time has really flown. It was obviously a great honor to be voted by my colleagues to serve as their leader. And, you know, we've had these issues that are, it was unfortunate the circumstance I came in. I was kind of had to move quickly because we had at the time the state of the state, we had the governor's budget being proposed and then this bail reform issue. So we had to move very quickly on some, I think, very substantial issues. But I'm really happy to have the support of the conference. I think our conference, the members of it, really are some of the hardest working members of the legislature. So I'm proud to serve with them and obviously be their leader.
All right. Well, that's where we'll leave it. Thank you so much, Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay, for joining us here in New York Now.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
All right, and now it's the Reporters Roundtable. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union, and I'm happy to be joined by my colleagues Amanda Fries from my own fine publications, Capital Bureau, and Capital Bureau Chief of the USA Today Network, Joe Spector. Thanks so much for coming in.
Absolutely.
So as we saw at the top of the show, the legislature over Monday night into Tuesday morning passed a $40 million package meant to address at least the beginning, the opening chapters of the battle against coronavirus. Is that going to be enough? Is that money going to, how is that money going to be used to kind of address the problem?
Yeah, it felt like it was getting us ready for the end of March when lawmakers have these overnight debates about budget issues. And so we got a little bit of that in early March because of coronavirus. But yeah, Casey, I mean, that's the critical question, right? Will $40 million be enough? You know, when it was approved, some lawmakers were concerned about the power that it gives the governor, for one, but also how will that money be dispersed? Who will it go to what areas of the state? Obviously, the epicenter right now of the coronavirus is in New Rochelle in Lower Westchester. So, you know, will a lot of the money go there? Will it go to other places? How much of that money will go to local governments who are kind of on the front line here? You see, in New Rochelle is over 1,000 people quarantined. Local governments, the county government there in particular, has to be there dealing with that issue. So how that money will be dispersed and whether it will be enough, I think will certainly be a key issue over the next few weeks.
And certainly also with the legislation, the language within it that gives these more broad powers to the governor, there's a whole host of natural disasters that are listed within it, including infestation, volcanic activity.
Volcanic activity was one that I did not expect to see on the list, but
yeah. We have to look into that one.
I know.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to hear where these volcanoes are in New York.
There was pushback to this from Republicans, which is not a surprise. Andrew Lanza from Staten Island said this was akin to martial law, but also from some Democrats who were concerned about the speed with which the governor's power has expanded. And you wrote just this week about how there are already concerns about the way that the governor likes to include language in appropriations that gives him, you know, more leeway on where funds should go as well.
Absolutely, Casey, you're spot on. I feel like the coronavirus appropriations bill is a microcosm to the larger issue that multiple legislators on both sides of the aisle have expressed concern over the sweeping powers that the governor can take in the budget process. And it's already a strong executive approach. So
right.
Needless to say, to have these budget bills also specific amounts of money, millions of dollars from various different departments, be able to go to any other department for any reason. It gives the governor broad power.
So speaking of millions of dollars, the coronavirus is, of course, impacting Wall Street, which is closely tied. The fate of Wall Street is, of course, closely tied to the fate of the state's coffers. This is clearly going to put a dent in all funds and the general fund. not only in the next fiscal year, but also potentially just in the couple of weeks remaining to us in this fiscal year?
Oh, no question. I mean, no state in the country as is tied to Wall Street for its revenue than New York. About 13% of New York's revenue comes from Wall Street. It used to be even higher. It used to be 17, 18%. But as Wall Street has contracted to some extent since the recession, it's come down. But nonetheless, 13% of New York's revenue from Wall Street. And then you put in the factor of people who live out of state or who worked on Wall Street. It just it's a huge impact on the state's budget. And when you're dealing with a $6 billion deficit going into next year, and those deficits are going to become even bigger in future years, if we start losing revenue in this state, it's going to put a real problem on the state's finances, no question.
Turning away from the global pandemic, let's turn to the happy comfort of politics, specifically the fact that with Elizabeth Warren out of the Democratic hunt, it is now really a two-man race between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. The governor was asked about where his endorsement might go by our own Dan Clark in a Red Room press conference on Thursday, and the governor seemed to be kind of coy despite the fact that he has been an ally of Joe Biden's for years.
I'll let Joe take this one.
Oh, well, thank you. he's made no secret of the fact that he is supportive of Joe Biden. I mean, it almost came to the point where it was, when he was talking, it almost sounded like an endorsement, although they later said, I haven't made an official endorsement, but he's been in Joe Biden's corner from the onset here. And so the reason he didn't address it, he said he was focused on the coronavirus. Maybe he didn't want to get into politics at that point. But it's going to be interesting, not only what Cuomo does, certainly he's been aligned with Biden, but, our primary is April 28th in New York.
Right.
And so if you remember 4 years ago, I mean, we had one day in Albany where there was like four or five candidates all within the Capital Region on one day. And all the reporters were going from one to the other to the other. You had both the Republican primary and the Democratic one this year. Obviously, Donald Trump's the only candidate on the ballot in New York, the president, when it comes to on the Republican side. But now you have Bernie and Biden, and will they make it? Will one of them make it, or both of them make it, to April 28th?
The governor said in answering that question, well, there are other options. But at this point, there really aren't any other options, except, I guess, Tulsi Gabbard as well.
And I feel as though at this point, we have plenty of time. The governor has had multiple red rooms when it comes to the coronavirus. I think all of us reporters at the Capitol are a little fatigued regarding the coronavirus. So I think those questions will come up again, and maybe the answer will be different.
Well, the question was the question was posed to him, when are you going to endorse Joe
right.
Biden? So he said, and then they said, I'm not going to say it. And I think Dan said, well, that means you're going to endorse Bernie. And he sort of said, there is another person out there, rather than Biden and Bernie. So who knows what he's going to,
It's fair to say the governor's endorsement would have kind of more force if it comes perhaps 2 or 3 weeks before the April primary.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's possible.
That's true.
So in other political news, Rob Astorino, former county executive, former gubernatorial Republican candidate, has announced that he is not done with politics, that he's going to run for a state Senate seat.
Yeah, it sure seems like it. He hasn't officially said so, but it certainly seems like he's headed in that direction. Rob Astorino, former county executive in Westchester, might run against Pete Harkum, the Democrat, in a district that stretches across northern Westchester into Putnam and into parts of Dutchess. And this has really been a swing district for many, many years, decade or more. And, Democrats have it now. They have 40 seats in the state Senate. They have a pretty large majority now. But that will be a key one if Astorino gets in there. He has something like 80. He has like $8 million or so. He has a lot of money in the, no, not 8 million.
More than 800 grand.
$800,000 in the bank. And so that is formidable right there. And plus his name recognition running for statewide office as well.
Right. Speed question. Will the governor go on a weed tour amid the coronavirus crisis? Amanda.
I don't think so. But he also has been going to a lot of locations where we've seen the coronavirus. So maybe I'm going to remain hopeful.
Weed tour, Joe, yes or no?
I say no on the weed tour. I think he stays put.
I say no as well. All right, thanks very much to Amanda Fries from the Times Union and Joe Spector from the USA Today Network.
Thanks to Casey and this week's roundtable. Solitary confinement was supposed to change in New York last year after Governor Andrew Cuomo proposed a series of regulations to limit the practice. But it's been more than 8 months, and those rules still haven't gone into effect. Advocates are pushing the legislature to pass a bill that would go even further than Cuomo's regulations. We spoke to a few of them. Scott Palcheritz and Victor Pate from the Halt Solitary Coalition, thanks so much for joining us here on New York Now.
Thanks for having us on.
So we're here talking about solitary confinement, which is an issue that's kind of near and dear to my heart, and I know obviously to yours as well. You've been fighting for this bill called the Halt Bill for I don't know how many years, but at least through last year, it was huge at the Capitol. It's called the Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Solitary Confinement Act or Bill, one of those two things. So we're going to get to that, and it's very important, but I want to start out by looking at solitary confinement overall in New York right now, because I feel like a lot of people may not have a concept of how these people in solitary confinement live as under current law and regulations. Scott or Victor, can you tell me what solitary is like right now in New York State?
Yeah, so thank you very much. Thank you for having us on. So, you know, and just for a point of clarity, so we've been working on this bill for like 8 years now. And, you know, solitary in New York State is inhumane. People being held in, you know, decades, cages the size of an elevator, 6x9, alone, by themselves, not having any opportunity for interaction or any other human contact. And as it is in New York State right now, people are held in these cells for 23 to 24 hours a day, supposedly out for 1 hour, which include recreation, showers, et cetera, et cetera.
So Scott, you're an attorney. I should have mentioned that at the top, sorry. Solitary, is there a legal cap on the number of days that somebody can spend in solitary confinement in New York right now? I know that's been an issue in other states, but I don't know where we are in New York right now.
In New York State, there is no legal cap. So people can spend and do spend months and years regularly in solitary confinement and even decades. People have spent in New York State 30 years in solitary confinement. And the United Nations has said no person should ever spend more than 15 days in solitary because it otherwise amounts to torture. And we are torturing thousands of people every day. Last year, 38,000 people there were sentences to solitary confinement. 38,000 times they sent somebody to solitary confinement, and solitary has been increasing, actually, in New York State. So it's really an abomination.
So some context here just for our viewers. The governor came out with some regulations at the end of the last session in June because the Halt Bill, which I mentioned earlier, did not pass in the legislature. So the governor said that he was going to do some things administratively. I just want to go through those really quickly. His regulations would have placed a theoretical 30-day cap on solitary confinement. It also would have banned solitary for certain people, like pregnant women, people with mental illness would be transferred to different units, some things like that. I don't want to spend too much time on the governor's regulations because from what I understand, before we came on the air, they're not in effect. Is that right, Scott?
They're not in effect, and I would say the bigger problem with the regulations is that even if and when they do go into effect, those limits you mentioned aren't real. There are glaring loopholes that will be very easily exploited, and we know already by experience that anytime there's any leeway, the department in New York State will try to get around them. So just as an example, the regulations don't provide any time limit for one form of solitary called keep lock. And a recent report by the NYCLU said that even though some small numbers of people in SHU has gone down, the numbers in keep lock have actually risen because they haven't been regulated. And so people in keep lock still spend the same kind of condition Victor mentioned earlier, and yet there's no time limits in the regs. The regs also don't prevent what we would call cycling. So somebody spends, let's say, 30 days in solitary. They come out for a day or even a few hours. They could be right back in solitary again. So these aren't even real limits. There's glaring loopholes that will allow people to still spend months and years in solitary under those regulations if they ever go into effect.
So do we know why the governor's regulations haven't gone into effect yet? I mean, it's almost been 3/4 of a year now, and they were supposed to go into effect last year.
So any regulations, my understanding, are, you know, open to public comment, which they were, and then it's up to the executive whether to put them forward or not. So he might never put those forward into effect. He may change them based on the public comment. We just don't know. The bottom line is there's a bill in the legislature, I know we're going to talk about it, that has majority support in both houses of the legislature, and they need to act to end this torture because thousands of people are being tortured and they have the power to stop it.
So great transition. Victor, let's talk about the Hall bill. This is a bill, as you said, you've been advocating for 8 years for this bill. Tell me a little bit about it. I want to start with the time caps on how long somebody could spend in solitary under the bill. Tell me about that. That's 15 days, correct?
So with the whole bill, we're saying that, you know, people should not be held long term, but if they need to be separated from population for any reason, that it be done humanely, but also be done for programmatic and therapeutic purposes, that if a person is going to be given solitary confinement, the cap would be 15 days. After those 15 days, then people will be sent to a specific unit that is specifically designed with specifically trained people that will give people treatment, psychological counseling, et cetera, as well as having all opportunities for interaction with another human being.
In other words, something that would not be punitive, but more rehabilitative.
Correct.
So, Scott or Victor, either of you, do we know why this bill hasn't passed? As you said, it has majority support in both the Assembly and the Senate, and that doesn't mean just people that have committed to vote on it. A majority of Democrats and lawmakers have said that they would actually pass it. They're going to sponsor the bill. Do we know why it hasn't come to the floor yet?
There's no excuse. It has to be brought to a vote. As you mentioned, 34 Senate co-sponsors, 79 Assembly co-sponsors. Others have committed to vote for it as well. I don't know if there's another bill in the legislature that has this much support, and I don't know if there's another bill that has this much human rights need, where people are just literally losing their minds because the state is carrying out torture on a widespread scale to thousands of people.
All right. Scott Paltrowitz and Victor Pate from the HALT Solitary Coalition, thanks so much for joining us here on New York Now.
And thank you for having
us. Thank you for having us.
For more on what we covered on this week's show, head over to New York Now's website at nynow.org and follow us on social media at nynow_PBS. Until then, I'm Dan Clark. Thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.